This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight,
President Jacob Zuma has 5 days to explain himself to a court, and by extension, to his country, for his widely unpopular decision to fire a well-respected finance minister and reshuffle his cabinet in March.
That's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. We'll have full details coming up. Also, a U.S. service member has been killed during an operation against al-Shabaab militants in Somalia. New research shows that Somalia's devastating drought is having serious consequences for more than 1 million children. And fossils have been found from what may be one of Africa's last dinosaurs. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, a U.S. service member has been killed during an operation against al-Shabaab militants in Somalia. The U.S. military says the service member was killed near Bari, Somalia, approximately 40 miles west of Mogadishu. The military's Africa Command says U.S. forces were conducting an advise and assist mission alongside members of the Somali National Army. A small number of American military personnel are stationed in Somalia to help the Somali government combat al-Shabaab. The group is an affiliate of al-Qaeda and has tried for a decade to topple the government and turn Somalia into a strict Islamic state. Well, new research shows that Somalia's devastating drought is having serious consequences for more than 1 million children. Save the Children says they're at risk of increased violence, child labor, and of being separated from their families. The group's new study found the impact of the drought has gone far beyond life-threatening shortages of essentials like food and water. It's also causing high levels of psychological distress in children who are showing unusual symptoms such as bouts of crying and screaming. Violence against children is also on the rise, including sexual violence such as rape and molestation. Devendra Tok is the global media manager for Save the Children in Hargeisa, Somaliland. He spoke with me about the plight of children in Somalia.
During emergencies such as drought here in Somalia, children are always the most vulnerable, and children face many problems. One of them is child protection. We know that children during such situations, particularly when families are getting separated and families are migrating and children have to move with their parents to new places, they have to meet with new people and get accustomed to being in a new place and also in strange circumstances. They also have no school to go to. All these conditions make the situation of children very perilous. The first issue, of course, is that children are with strangers and therefore they are much more vulnerable to abuse. And of course, when you have a drought situation which compels families into deeper levels of poverty, then there are issues like child labor which come into the picture because families need anything and everything to get along with their lives.
Can you give us an example of some of the experiences that children in Somalia are facing because of the drought situation?
We were visiting a few communities. In particular, we met with a family living just by the main highway from Hargeisa when you're going towards the western side, where there are more greener areas apparently. And they've been there for 4 months. And one issue that was pointed out was that children absolutely hate living there. For example, children are scared of the hyenas because these families are camping out in temporary shelters out in the open. And they can hear the hyenas crying at night and even approaching their homes. So children are terrified of these situations. There's been a bit of rain recently. Suddenly it gets very cold in those regions. These families there don't have adequate shelter. They don't even have any kind of sheets to sleep on. And even their clothes are running out. So these children feel very cold and they are wet. So children are really, really under a lot of stress. Moreover, when they see their parents also being stressed out, it really complicates matters for children because they just don't know whom to turn to. And the other issue, of course, for them is that they are not going to school. As we know, that final exams for children are coming up in July this year, and many schools are either not open or children have moved so far away from their schools and are in such a situation that sometimes their parents can't even pay a paltry amount which is required to pay for the secondary education here.
Also, you had mentioned that they are at risk of sexual violence such as rape and molestation, and this is due to them being separated from their families. So what kind of treatment is there available for them, especially regarding the psychological trauma of this?
Yes, of course. Psychosocial support is very important. Creating awareness among communities is what we do very well. So therefore, we have integrated much of our education work also into our other programs, because with the schools closed, we are ensuring that, you know, we are able to quickly set up even child-friendly spaces. These child-friendly spaces have a trained person to provide them with recreational and educational opportunities and basically become a hub where children can be with other children and also feel more secure. You know, it's not very easy to come by figures about whether a child is raped or whether a child is missing. But therefore, through dissemination with communities, working at the community level with the communities, particularly now in the drought, we would intensify working with the community to ensure that the communities are aware of the risks towards children and how to be able to, you know, overcome them, which includes simple things like, you know, taking care of health and hygiene.
Looking ahead in this situation, what do you see in the future for these children?
Our Save the Children U.S. CEO, her name is Carolyn Miles, was here for the last 4 or 5 days, and she mentioned that we have to really now start to reimagine the future, which means that we have to find solutions which will work on a long-term basis. Just a couple of ideas which came up there was that we must also focus on education. Education is the only thing which in the long term can build resilience and safeguard the livelihoods of the livelihoods of society as well as the well-being of children, either during the phase of an emergency or thereafter.
Devendra Tok is the global media manager for Save the Children. He spoke with me from Hargeisa, Somaliland. South Africa's ruling African National Congress pushed back today on a high court ruling that President Jacob Zuma must explain his rationale for the firing of a popular finance minister in March. It's the latest sign of pressure on Zuma ahead of a no-confidence vote in parliament. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
President Jacob Zuma has 5 days to explain himself to a court and, by extension, to his country, for his widely unpopular decision to fire a well-respected finance minister and reshuffle his cabinet in March. It's the latest twist in an ongoing political drama that has besieged the increasingly unpopular president. Tens of thousands of people have recently held marches demanding his resignation. Earlier this week, the president was booed off the stage at a political rally held for union workers. On Thursday, a high court approved an opposition party demand that Zuma provide records to explain why he fired Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan as part of the controversial reshuffle that prompted widespread outrage and caused a major ratings agency to downgrade the nation's sovereign credit rating. Zuma's ruling ANC panned the ruling as unfettered encroachment of the judiciary into the realm of the executive. The opposition Democratic Alliance, which has filed numerous court cases against Zuma, hailed it as a victory, not only for the DA, but for all South Africans who deserve to know on what basis the president made this disastrous decision. Politics professor Daryl Glazer of the University of Witwatersrand says this is a strange moment for South African politics.
We're in a kind of exceptional circumstance where the judiciary is having to, as it were, put out fires and pick up pieces because other parts of the state are not functioning effectively. So a lot of people will excuse or justify the court's role in that way. But I don't think it's ideal that the court should be extending itself too far into the domain of other branches of government. I think, however, on the whole, its interventions in relation to Zuma have been healthy for our constitutional democracy. So it's a difficult call.
South Africa's constitution permits the president to make changes to his cabinet, but also stipulates that decisions should be fair and reasonable. That's why this case got to court. Initially, Zuma and his allies said they fired the minister because of a widely discredited intelligence report that accused him of plotting against the president. Glazer says the court's decision could have a major impact.
What has to be decided is whether there are other elements in play, whether the executive is required to give some account of its decisions, but then does that mean it has to account for all of its decisions, not only this one, but if one's to be impartial about it, all decisions in the future, because you wouldn't want to give the impression that the court is taking sides in a political dispute. So this such a principle would have to be impartially applied, and it would probably be quite unusual amongst the world's political leaders and to have presidents or prime ministers that have to publicly explain every cabinet reshuffle.
It's likely, legal and political pundits say, that the president will appeal the ruling and thereby avoid a courtroom confession. It's also likely, they say, that the president's drama is far from over. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Preliminary results from Algeria's parliamentary election today indicate the governing FNL party lost approximately 70 seats. However, it should be able to remain in power in a coalition with several smaller allied parties. Voter turnout was slightly over 38%, according to Interior Ministry figures. Despite some calls to boycott the electoral process, Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Voter turnout in parliamentary elections across Algeria appeared to be lighter than the government had hoped, although 38% of eligible voters reportedly cast their ballots, according to Interior Ministry figures. Participation was down from 43% in the previous parliamentary election in 2012. Some younger voters appeared to heed calls on social media to boycott the election. Algerians in some parts of the country appeared to vote in larger numbers than in others. Despite the regional disparities, though, Interior Minister Nouredin Bedoui proclaimed the election a success, emphasizing the governing Front de Libération Nationale party won the largest number of seats.
Jabhat Tahrir al-Watan, 164 maqad.
He says the ruling FLN party won 164 seats, while the runner-up Tagamo party, with which it is allied, won 97. The next two largest parties, he adds, won 33 and 28 seats, respectively. He also says a large number of women candidates won seats in this year's election. Ripples of discontent, however, were evident on social media. A number of videos on social media urging voters to boycott the election appeared to resonate with some younger voters amid anger over high youth unemployment rates and accusations of corruption against the ruling FLN party. Older voters appeared to be more enthusiastic about voting, though, amid concerns for stability. Algerians worry about civil war and chaos in neighboring countries and hope to avoid a similar fate. The country suffered its own bloody civil war during the 1990s, in which thousands of people died. President Abdelaziz Bouteflika is widely credited for having brought an end to that civil war, and many worry about the fate of the country when he dies. Algerian TV showed the ailing president, who suffered a stroke several years ago and remains wheelchair-bound, casting his ballot Thursday. Lingering concerns over Bouteflika's health prompted many voters to turn out to cast their ballots amid hopes of staving off potential instability. Women supporters of the government ululated to express support during a final campaign rally in which Prime Minister Abdelmalek Salal defends his government's record and claims that the country is doing well. Louisa Hanoun, who heads the socialist Parti des Travailleurs, disagrees with the Prime Minister, however, and claims many people are not satisfied with the government's performance. She says it is a citizen's right to abstain from voting because their decision to do so reflects anger and a rejection of the ruling parties including what she calls their policies of marginalizing various parts of society. Low oil and gas prices have put pressure on the government to cut back on spending, which has negatively affected young people and the less privileged portions of society. Former Commerce Minister Amara Ben Younis, who now heads the Mouvement Populaire Algérien party, told journalists he understands why some Algerians are angry with the government, but said they need to channel their anger in a constructive way.
شوف انا نسمع كل الناس وكل الجزائريين والجزائريات عندهم الحق باش يعبروا عن الراي تاعهم.
He says Algerians have the right to express their opinion either by voting or by boycotting the election, but he doesn't really see any solution to the country's problems outside the electoral process. Despite claims of electoral fraud on social media, one election observer from the Arab League told journalists that voting took place under optimal conditions. Algerian TV showed government helicopters flying in the skies of the capital, Algiers, as part of security measures to prevent violence during the election. It also showed police stopping vehicles to check their owners' identities in areas around polling stations. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 22 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. A U.S. service member has been killed during an operation against al-Shabaab militants in Somalia. New research shows that Somalia's devastating drought is having serious consequences for more than 1 million children. South Africa's ruling African National Congress pushes back today on a high court ruling that President Jacob Zuma must explain his reasons for firing a popular finance minister in March. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The Nigerian government is downplaying rumors about President Buhari's health after missing his third weekly cabinet meeting. A government minister says Buhari was in the office on May 2nd but stayed home on May 3rd on the advice of his doctors. Morocco has been boosting its phosphate mining industry, hoping to corner up to 40% of the world market within 3 years. The country's huge deposits of phosphate, a vital nutrient for agriculture, are part of an ancient seabed that's littered with history. For example, in one of Morocco's strip mines, fossils have been found of what may be one of Africa's last dinosaurs. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Very little is known about dinosaurs in Africa during the Cretaceous period, but they, like others around the world, were wiped out by an asteroid impact 66 million years ago. One of them was the Shinanosaurus barbaricus. A piece of its jawbone was found in Morocco's Oulad Abdoun Basin, west of the Atlas Mountains. Dr. Nick Longrich is one of the lead researchers.
It's a carnivorous dinosaur. It's a two-legged predator, similar to T-Rex. It's not quite as large. It's about maybe 8 or 9 meters long.
Longrich is with the Milner Center for Evolution and the Department of Biology and Biochemistry at the University of Bath. He says the African dinosaur is more primitive than Tyrannosaurus rex.
A lot of people might not appreciate this, but T-Rex is actually very closely related to birds, closer to birds than almost any other dinosaur you can think of, closer to birds than it is to, say, Brontosaurus or to this thing. And so this thing is less bird-like. It's got a smaller brain. T-Rex was probably feathered. This thing would have been scaly, but it walked on two legs like a T-Rex or like a bird. It has a very short, blunt snout, kind of this bulldog snout, and incredibly reduced arms. So it actually has smaller arms than a Tyrannosaurus does. T-Rex could easily beat this thing in an arm wrestling contest.
It also had very tiny hands. Shinanosaurus bavaricus helps paint a picture of Africa 66 million years ago, even if just a few fossils were discovered in a mine.
It's not the first place you would look for a dinosaur in marine rocks, but it's a huge phosphate strip mine, and the mines consist of these deposits laid down on the floor of an ancient sea. They're rich in bones and teeth and fragments from things like sharks, fish, marine reptiles, pterosaurs, things like that. And they sank to the bottom of the sea, and this bone kind of accumulates, and they mine this stuff and use it for fertilizer. And in the process, they uncover all these fossils.
Longrich says finding dinosaur fossils in an ancient seabed is like winning the lottery. He speculates on how the dinosaur got there.
Probably drowned and got washed out to sea. You know, some large animals will swim between islands, maybe got swept offshore by the current. Perhaps there's a flood and it got caught up by a river and the river kind of carried it out to sea once it drowned. So it's probably floating for a while and then the carcass just decomposed and sank to the seafloor.
Longrich says the Earth would have been a very different place had that asteroid missed the planet.
Just the slightest little deviation in the course of that asteroid, a little bit more radiation from the sun kind of pushing off course, a collision with the comet or asteroid kind of knocking that asteroid off course. If it hadn't hit, you know, there wouldn't have been the extinction of this animal. It wouldn't have gone extinct. Its descendants would have persisted for tens of millions of years until now, and we'd still have dinosaurs here.
Longrich worked with his colleagues based in Morocco, France, and Spain. Their findings appear in the journal Cretaceous Research. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Mozambique's opposition leader has indefinitely extended a unilateral truce he first announced in December. AFP quotes Afonso de la Cama as saying while it is not the end of the war, it is the beginning of the end. He calls it great news for the people of Mozambique. His Renamo rebels had fought the government between 1976 and 1992, a war that left 1 million dead. However, rebels renewed attacks in 2013, accusing government leaders of not fulfilling their promises and enriching themselves. About 800 rebels are believed based in the central Gorongosa mountain range. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Shauna Renee, the lady DJ and host of Soul Lounge. Every Sunday at 1400 UTC, I choose an artist that you and I love, and we break down their entire career while listening to their biggest hits. That's what we do here on the Soul Lounge. Once again, every Sunday, 1400 UTC, right here.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.